Okay, so here we go. We're gonna do Shimshon. We've actually done Shimshon several times as both the Chabura, and we spent a good few weeks in the Navi Chabura once upon a time on Shimshon. But here's the amazing thing. I don't know if I don't know if everybody remembers when we did Navi. Rabbi Hatton's book at the time was not a book. It's just, I guess, articles online. It ended right before Shimshon. And then that was like a lot of years ago. And now here it is, years later. The book actually came out about a year and a half ago. And in his introduction, he says that, he appreciates all of his Navi followers' patience. And here we go. Here's Shimshon finally. And I kind of laughed because I remembered emailing him, asking him for the notes. All those years ago. So on Shavuos, I was like, gotta figure out what to do to learn. So I decided I was gonna learn some of it. Only got through chapter one, but I thought it was a fantastic, fantastic read. And it was a great idea. So once I finished with Behatin, I also read Dr. Eli Tzur, whose sefer is Places in the Parsha. It's a really, you can't see anything. My screen is, but trust me, it's a really good book. It's like about double the size of your typical Sefer for Magid books, but each one is a different place and the geography and how that plays in. So of course, for Naso, there's no place to talk about other than the Haftorah, which is Bein Sarah uVein Eshta'ol. It's actually pretty cool because if you drive into Beit Shemesh, when you hit IKEA, there's a sign that you're passing Eshta'ol. And when you get to almost Ramat Beit Shemesh, there's another sign that says Tzara. So pretty much Beit Shemesh finds itself Bein Tzara uVein Eshta'ol. And Shimshon himself grew up and lived in the area. And there are places that are marked Kever Shimshon, Kever Manoach. And then, not surprisingly, there's also Kever Dan, which Shimshon is from that Shevet. So whether those are actually their graves or not is always, a separate question. But it definitely is considered the area of Shimshon. So I guess I'll put out that question first, since I think there's a really good chance we won't get to that. But the second page is a map. Unfortunately, it's not a great map. I think I stretched it too much, so it's a little grainy. But I guess the question is, like, is this really, does it make sense that it's Bein Sarah uVein Eshta'ol is Kever Dan and the area of Dan, if it's considered biblically to be the tribal land of Yehuda? And in fact, where Beit Shemesh is Azor Yerushalayim, that's number one. And number two, if it's Azor Yerushalayim, it's considered probably an extension, a little bit of Yehuda. But when you get to a certain point on your drive in and out of Beit Shemesh, there'll be a sign that says, you're leaving Mate Yehuda. So it does not tell you you're leaving Mate Dan. So the question is, how does that work? Is it Dan's land? Is it Yehuda? Is it Yehuda's land? So maybe there's a chance we'll get to that tonight or possibly in the future. Okay, let's start from the beginning. From the beginning, we're going to start with a little bit about what a Nazir is, and then we're going to transition into Shoftim, the Haftorah, and hopefully, when it's all over, we'll have a better appreciation of Sefer of Shimshon and Nazirus, and hopefully, the wait for Rabbi Hatton's Sefer to come out was worth it. וידבר השם למשה לאמור, דבר אל בני ישראל, ואמרת אליהם איש או אישה, כי אפלי לנדור נדר, נזיר להזיר להשם. Okay, so while we're reading these couple psukim, certainly be on the lookout for what the Mila Mancha is, although it should be pretty clear. So Hashem says to Moshe, speak to the Jewish people and tell them, a man or a woman, when they kiafli. Kiafli is like from the word, I'm not sure exactly what the shoresh would be, but it's to enunciate or to say. When a person says a neder nazir l'Hashem, he becomes a nazir. Tashem, miyayin v'sheichar yazir, chomets yayin v'chomets sheichar lo yishtev, v'chomets shad anavim lo yishtev, anavim lachim v'vishim lo yochel. You can't drink any wine, anything intoxicating, any vinegar of wine, any vinegar of alcohol, of beer, or the like, and anything, any soaked grapes you can drink, And anavim lachim, wet, now I guess moist grapes, so those are real grapes. Veveshim, or dry ones, raisins you can't eat. You can't eat anything from the grapes, not the peel, not the inside. The zag, I think, might be the pit. Additionally, you cannot have it get a haircut. For all the days that a person says to Hashem, Kadosh Tia Gadel Parasarosho, and his hair is holy. And then the third halacha is that you can't, all the days of your Nazirus, you cannot become Tame. So those are the three concepts. No drinking of, no consuming of any grape products. Then you're not allowed to get a haircut. And lastly, you can't become Tame. Okay, those are the three halachos. I'm sure someone picked out the Mila Mancha already. So more of a Shoresh Mancha.
Nun Zayin Resh.
Good, excellent. Yeah, Nun Zayin Resh, whether it's Nazir, Lehazir, Nezer, right, all of those things, it's in there a lot. And by the way, it continues a lot. This is only the first. These are only the first six psukim of the parsha. If you continue until the end of the perek, you'll see it comes up many, many more times. So, three basic questions. Is it good to be a Nazir? That's number one. All right, we'll put that all out there in a second. What is the word net Nazir, right? The Mila Mancha is Nazir. What does that mean, right? What's its root and its meaning? And last is, how does Nazirus connect to the Parsha before it? Right, Perek Hei is Sota, Perek Vav is Nazir. How do they connect with each other? Okay, so let's put it out there. Is it good to be a Nazir, yes or no?
No.
Okay, why not?
Well, it depends. It depends. We have to do a chatas at the end, so some aspect of it is not good.
Okay, excellent, yeah.
I'll go with yes, because you're taking on the issues of being a Nazir to bring yourself closer to God. That means you've already got a good start somewhere inside you where you're going to take on this period of time.
Excellent. So both what Srili and Greg are saying are based on the psukim, meaning this is not something that I feel it's good or I feel it's bad. Like the chatas is an essential part of the nazir. So you have to wonder, right? If it was, you had to bring a different korban, okay, fine, but a korban chatas. But in the but Greg's point comes from the very second pasuk, lazir lahashem. It's not that you become a nazir, but you're lazir lahashem. You're doing something vis-a-vis God. Okay, so yeah, excellent. Anybody else?
What does yafli mean?
So I think, I don't know. I mean, in my room here, I don't have an English translation chumash. I'm gonna see if Art Scroll, if Rashi. Oh, that was a bad slip. If Rashi has a translation that will be helpful, but I think it's to like enunciate or say. But if someone wants to safaria it or quickly art scroll it like that, I won't.
Okay, so it's not a conditional word. It's just a way of speech, more or less.
I think so.
Yes, yeah, well, so, that's fine. So the psukim seemed to me like it's neutral. I don't know if is there somewhere in here that implies if something like there's not a, it isn't a commandment.
Ki yafli, when you, so Rashi says yafrish, which I assume is like to say or to, right, as opposed to separate, but it could be either one. Yeah, when you decide to do this. So it's, okay, so
it's kind of, is that like when you decide or if you decide? It's like almost like it reminds me, not in the words, but if you make a king for yourself. We've had this discussion. Is it a command to have a king? Or if you do this, this is how you do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely the second one. You don't have to become a Nazir. Most people did not become a Nazir. But if you should, you know, when you decide that you want to be one, this is what you would, this is how you do it. Or if you decide you want to be one, this is how you would do it.
So it seems like on the scale in Judaism, it seems like it's neutral. Like circumstances may drive you to do this. You may have reasons to do it. And it's, you can, you don't have to. It's, I think it's kind of neutral.
Right, I hear. I mean, right, I guess you could also make the opposite argument. It's like, you know, like, right, the same thing. Well, when you go out, you don't die. The Torah doesn't, the Torah is not saying, is not neutral necessarily on the idea of Eisha Yifat Toar. It's not a good thing. But there is, that if you're going to be at war and blah, blah, blah happens, okay, so this is how you do it, that it's kosher. So that's the question. Is it that, you know, when you do, when you decide that this is what you want to do, okay, so we're not big fans, but if you're going to do it this way, or are we saying, listen, this is a great opportunity?
Well, it certainly doesn't suggest great opportunity. At best, it's, I'll take it back though. At best, it's neutral. It's not problematic, but it's certainly not great.
Got it. Okay.
I think David's right. It's probably situational. If you interpret the word yafli, right, it can go either way. Is the sholish nafal or is the sholish pele?
I hear.
One is a little more, you know, different, dramatic in different ways, right? So it could be positive, could be negative. That's how you read it.
Right. I hear. Okay.
And someone in shul this week said, I think it was Bob Insel's son-in-law, but I forget it. Really smart guy.
Bensi?
Yes. He talked last night, and he said the notion of the chatas is, it's not in these psukim, is it? The chatas?
No, it's later on.
No, right. So it's not a tradition. He was, this is not his own thing, I forget who it was, but it's not a standalone chatas based on a sin, based on an abeira that you do. It is the package of an ola, a chatas, and a shlomim. It's the whole package, mm-hmm. whatever the reasons are, but it's not a standalone because you did X. That was one of the things that he explained. So
right.
It sort of like minimized the notion that it's because of an avera, and you know, therefore the implication is you should not do it.
Right. I mean, look, if you successfully complete your nazirus, you still have to bring a chatas. I believe if you also unsuccessfully, you know, not complete your nazirus, you also have to bring a chatas. But I think that matters. Like, so if you did everything right, why are you still bringing a chatas? So you didn't do anything inherently wrong, but did you potentially pass up on all the opportunities that the world has? Yeah, so there is definitely something going wrong here. But okay, yeah. So, okay, so it seems like we're in a good place because Chazal themselves align themselves with everybody's feelings here. It's good, it's bad, it's new. I don't know about neutral, but nobody says, oh, it's definitively good or it's definitively bad. Now, the Mila Mancha is not Nazir. Nazir, by the Kohen Gadol, it's the Kohen Gadol is you, by the Kohen Gadol, we use the word Nezer. I think Nezer Lokaval Rosho. So that is a very strange comparison. How is the Kohen Gadol similar to a Nazir? So Rabbi Hatton suggests that both of them are imbued with Kedusha. The difference is that the Kohen Gadol is appointed, right? So we look and say, oh, the Kohen Gadol is the one that is most deserving of this this crown of royalty, is the wrong word, but of kahuna on his head. And by the Nazir, it's actually self-imposed. He chooses that upon himself. So, okay, that's an interesting thing that we'll put on the back burner for a second. And then how does Nazirus connect to Sota? So the famous answer of the Gemara, Rashi quotes, is that Kala Roa Sota Bekil Kula, anybody that sees a Sota in her disgrace, Nazir Atzmo Min Ayayin, will assume that Yayin was a bad thing and will therefore refrain from it. Let's take a look at the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra has a great pshat. We may or may not have looked at this in the past. I'm not sure, but here we go. V'yesh omrim ki milat nazir mizrat nezer, right? Like that's what we said. It's a crown. V'ed ki nezer lokav rosho, and that's the pasuk by the Kohen Gadol. V'einenu rachok, and understand that this answer is not far off. V'da ki kol bnei adam ovdei tavata olam. Every person is he works, or he, I'm not sure if that's a typo and should be ovrei, or if my eyes are giving me a hard time, it really is a resh. I don't think so. But everybody is connected to all the passions of the world. V'hamelech bemet sheyesh lo nezer v'ateret malchut b'rosho kol mishu chafshi min hatavot. Who is truly a king? A king is someone that controls his own passions and controls his own desires. That is, that says the Ibn Ezra, is what a nazir is. It's a person that is the king of his desires. Okay, so that's an interesting, passable way of understanding nazir. Now, all of that should give us a little bit of a background to take a look at the Haftorah. Now let's take a look at the Haftorah. There's no way that we're going to get through all of it, but let's try to get through a little bit of it. So the Jewish people continued to do bad in the eyes of God, and Hashem puts them in the hands of the Plishtim for 40 years. Now, if you've studied Shoftim for the first 12 Prakim, either recently or you remember it well, you'll know that this is the formula of all of Shoftim. There's an enemy, and the enemy makes them suffer. The difference is that by most of the enemies, after it's over, the shofet comes and destroys the enemy, and the enemy is, for the most part, gone. We're going to see that that's not the case by the Plishtim. The Plishtim will continue to be a thorn in the side till the times of David and Melech and possibly beyond. That's one. But also, what's unique about this one is that normally the Jewish people cry out to Hashem. They say, like, God, we're suffering by the hands of fill-in-the-blank enemy. Save us. I don't remember, you know, learning this ever, but maybe we did and I forgot. This is the first time there's no crying out. It's just they suffer. So there's a man from Tzara, his name is Manoach, and his wife is an Akara, she can't give birth. So that pasuk also is loaded. There's a man from Tzara, okay, we discussed the placement of Tzara, at the beginning, and his name was Manoach. So first of all, what's in a name? Manoach, what does Manoach mean? Manoach comes from the word Menucha, right? It's to rest. So why is it that he has a name like that? I know you're going to say because his parents named him that, right? But why is it, is there any significance to the fact that his name is Manoach at a time when it could not possibly be any less connected to the times? People did not live Manoach. Now the truth is, there is a pasuk at the end of Parshas Bereishis that is similar to this, meaning the name is also, it doesn't match the times. Where is it? Right, Noach is born, his father is Lamech. Vayikrat Shmo Noach Lemor Zeyinachameinu Mimaseinu Umitzon Yadeinu Manadama She'er Hashem. That his father davens that he should be a Noach. He should give the people rest from all the hardships that they're going through. They're working too hard. So it could be that his parents had him in mind. The hope that Manoach would bring peace to the land. That's a possibility. But we'll take a look at the end and perhaps suggest something very, very different. Bishto Akara. His wife is an Akara. Okay, so quickly. And who's an Akara in Tanakh?
Imos.
Okay, good. Who else?
Else in Tanakh?
Yeah, we have one more that I could think of.
Shmuel's mom.
Right, Shmuel's mom. What's her name?
Chana.
Good. Isn't it amazing? We actually know the names. Okay, it took a little bit of time, but I'm going to say it's because it's 10:30 at night. We know the names of all the Akarot in the Torah, except this one doesn't have a name. Isn't it strange that she doesn't have a name? Why not? Tell us what her name is. What is her name, by the way? Eishes Manoach. Right? That's what she's called. Which, again, it's significant because she doesn't really have an identity, but she's actually probably the more important person in the story. not only because she gives birth, and obviously we wouldn't be there without her, but although we'd be in the same boat without Manoach himself in this case, but nonetheless, she's the hero of the story. She's the one that has like her head on right in this story, and yet she has no name. It kind of reminds me a little bit of Eshes Potiphar in that sense, that Eshes Potiphar is a pretty significant character in the story, and yet she has no name. So again, why is it that she has no name? Vayera malach Hashem el ha'isha vayomer ilah hinina ha'kara v'at akara v'lilat v'arit v'yalat bein. So the malach Hashem comes to her and says, listen, I know you're not kara, you can't give birth, but you're going to give birth and have a child. V'tai sharmina v'al tishte yayin v'sheichar al tochli kol tamei. So don't drink, don't eat anything tamei. Kinach hara v'yalat bein u'morelo yolo rosho kinezir lukim hiya narmen abeten. And when he's born, he won't get a haircut. Now, it makes perfect sense. The first two things, if she drinks wine, the wine goes into the baby. If she eats something that's tame, it goes to the baby. So the first two things are on her. Don't do these two things, which are two of the three components of the nazir. Because if you do them, right, your child will not be a nazir mibeten. It goes out of order from Bamidbar Vav by putting the haircut last, because the haircut is something that can't happen until the child is born. Meaning, if a woman gets a haircut when she's pregnant, it has no impact on the child, right? It's for him to be a nazir, his mom doesn't have to grow her hair out for 9 months, but she can't do those other two things. And what's going to happen? And he is going to save the Jewish people from the Plishtim. Okay, so let's... First off, that's like, could you imagine this woman is an Akara, midrashically, right? She's suffered by, you know, knowing that Boaz has had baby after baby after baby, and they're not too far away, and she and her husband have not. And now she gets this message, your kid is going to be a Nazir Mibetan. So the first question is, why is Shimshon a Nazir Mibetan? That doesn't make any sense. If we suggest that the Ibn Ezra is correct, that a Nazir is a Nazir, Nazir lo kavel rosho, it's like the Kohen Gadol, except that it's self-imposed, then this is no longer self-imposed. To be Shimshon, it's something that's forcefully put upon you at before birth. So why isn't Shimshon a Nazir Mibetan? And why does he have to be chosen from birth? Can't we just force him to be a leader when he's, I don't know, 10, 15 years old? Similar to Yirmiyahu, similar to Moshe. They didn't want to be leaders, but it was kind of forced upon them. Why wouldn't we be able to do that? But also, could you imagine she's hearing this for the first time? She must think that this is crazy. And yet she does not say anything to the Malach. The Malach gives her this message, and she accepts it. So she says, listen, she goes to her husband and says, I don't know, this is what just happened. The Isha Elokim came to me, and it looks like an angel. How she knows what an angel looks like, I don't know. I didn't ask him where he was from. And he didn't tell me his name.
So Tavo is weird.
What is?
The word Tavo.
But Tavo.
Like, she came as opposed to like Vayaras.
Oh, yeah. Meaning it's like, I get right.
It's like past. It's like, yeah, when she came home.
Right. It's almost like at dinner time when he comes back from the field. She's like, hey, right. How was your day? I saw this angel of God and he said, we're going to have a kid. Yeah. That's a good point. So she said, I can't eat or drink wine, or I can't drink wine, and I can't eat anything tamei because he's going to be in a zero leukim in a beten. I guess implicit in that is that you won't have to morello yellow rosho, which maybe is why she does not say anything. So that is Pasuk, that's Pasuk Aleph to Zion. There's this couple that hasn't had children. She has no name. She's given this very strange set of rules that don't seem to be to match what a Nazir is. And I don't think I said this, so if I'm repeating myself, I apologize. Unlike all of the other, what would be, besides not having a name, what is the biggest difference between her and all the other Akkarot?
They all daven for children. She didn't.
Correct. We don't even see anything. In fact, the only davening that we're going to see in the entire thing is Pasuk Chet. And this davening, even though language-wise it sounds a lot like Yitzchak, Vayetar Yitzchak L'Hashem L'Nochach Yishto, Vayetar Manoach L'Hashem, he davens to Hashem, Vayomer Bi Hashem Ish Elokim Asher Shalachta Yavo Na Ode Leinu V'Yoreinu Manasa L'Nar Yulad. He says, I need this angel to come back so he could teach us what to do with his child. Which is also strange. What does that mean? Wasn't the Malach as explicit as it can be? I'm giving you three rules, right? They mirror practically Perek Vav of Bamidbar. So what's going on here? Okay, so those are our questions. I have a lot more that I wanted to see in the Psukim, but we're out of time. So it seems, because we still have to answer 7 or 8 questions. So let's just try to understand one thing beforehand. Why did Shimshon have to grow his hair out? Even a Nazir, right? A Nazir for life does not have to grow his hair out forever. Meaning when your hair reaches a certain weight, you're allowed to cut it. The idea that the Nazir is going to have hair that is like, you know, all the way down to the floor and look, you know, and is impassable to deal with is not completely accurate. And yet Shimshon has to have this long hair. Why is it? So the Mefarshim present a bunch of different options. Two options: that Shimshon is super strong and the source of it is his hair. And the proof of that is that when Delilah finally cuts his hair, what happens? When the Plishtim come into the room to attack him, he's no longer able to fight back. And he gets his hair, he gets his strength back when, not only when he davens, but when his hair begins to grow back. Okay, so that's one possibility. The other possibility is that he's going to have a very, very tough life spiritually. He's going to have to live amongst the Plishtim. The Plishtim live along the coast. The women are very loose. And these are the things that he's, and the men too, this is what he's going to have to deal with. So his Nazirus is intended with his ugly hair, which the Gemara talks about, how the ugly hair takes the person out of like the whole frame of mind of being, I'm so good looking, and that gives him an arrogance. So that's what's supposed to be. So his Nazirus is supposed to protect him from sin. So the problem with both of these explanations are, in the end, it doesn't really play out that well. First off, the strength, it seems to be, it's like borrowed strength. It comes and goes when he has Ruach Hashem. So it doesn't necessarily seem to connect so much to the long hair. And secondly, if his religiosity is protected by his Nazirus, he marries a non-Jewish girl, he marries a Zona, or he has relations with a Zona, he does not seem to be successful in warding off sin. So how are we supposed to understand all this? So Rabbi Hatton has an amazing, amazing explanation. He asks, what's the connection between Nazir and Sota? They come back to back. So, of course, we quoted before, Kol Rotes Roa Sota Bekilkula, if you see a Sota in her disgrace, Nazir Atzmum in a Yayin. Rashi quotes it on the word Kiafli. But here's another possibility. Rabbi Hatton says, what happens when a person sees a Sota? When a person sees a Sota, what they recognize is that there was a breakdown of the relationship between husband and wife, and he leaves it both ways. Is it the husband's fault? Is it the wife's fault? Who did wrong in this case? Is it that the wife was not fully faithful to the husband, and therefore It leads her to do what she does. Or perhaps it's the husband who is too self-absorbed or too busy to pay attention to the wife, and therefore she finds herself in a position where she needs comfort, or she needs connection with other men. Again, a sota doesn't, if a sota is a vadai, that she certainly had an affair with another man, she's not a sota. That's it. If there's no
ish.
Right, she's forbidden to the husband. There's nothing to, I guess, to divorce her. Right, punishments are probably without Edim and Hasra are going to all be by Hashem. But what happens is he sees Rabbi Hatton says the breakdown of the relationship. The husband and wife are no longer connected, are no longer speaking, are no longer doing what they have to do, and so he sees how sad it is that there's a breakdown of a relationship. And so what does he do? He looks and says, "What I have to strengthen my relationship. Well, what's one relationship I could work on right away? I could work on the relationship I have with God." Shimshon lives at a time where there's no kesher with Hashem, where the kesher with Hashem is very weak. How do we know that? Because the Jewish people suffer. Right. Say again.
Plishtim in charge for 40 years. Okay, so it's a lot. And no one's crying out.
Right, there's 40 years of suffering and nobody says anything. So what happens? Shimshon lives at a time where the kesher with Hashem is very weak, and so he needs to do something to fix that. So what is the nature of a Nazir? A Nazir is a person that sees something. A lot of people saw the Sota B'Kul Kula, but the Nazir is the one that sees that there is something wrong and wants to do something about it. They will not accept the status quo. They challenge it. And that's exactly what Shimshon does. Shimshon challenges the status quo, and that's his entire life will be challenging the status quo. The Plishtim are bothering us. We need to say something. The Plishtim are bothering us. We need to do something. We need to reach out to God. Everything is Beruach Hashem. Every time something goes wrong and he needs to help the Jewish people, it's of course very much steeped in this relationship with God. That is what a Nazir is. Shimshon has to do all of this. He has to be a Nazir in order to send a message to Klal Yisrael that we have to do something about it. Eishes Manoach might have been the more impressive of the figures, yet she herself didn't daven Hashem. She accepted the status quo as is. Manoach, instead of coming from the word menucha, like it was a tefillah that there would be menucha in their time, he was a person that was just like the rest of the generation. He was Manoach in the sense that he was just quiet. He just didn't feel like doing anything about it. It just is. And not only is it, you know, Shimshon's time, but this is really symptomatic of the entire time of the Shoftim. Throughout the entire Shoftim, it's everybody lived underneath their tree. They did what they did. Nobody was willing to really make any effort to change things. They don't make an effort to unite the 12 tribes into a stronger nation. They don't make an effort to really get rid of all the nations of the land that would therefore rid the Jewish people of their suffering. They don't make an effort to build the Mikdash. And if there is one Shevet who is most symbolic of this, or most symptomatic of it, the one that is the absolute worst in terms of just saying it is what it is, who is that? It's Shevet Dan, right? They make no effort to do what they have to do. They're the ones with no land because they don't have the energy to do anything about it. They are all Manoach. They are all at rest, so to speak. Comes along Shimshon from birth or even from before birth, and he is so connected to Hashem in this way. And in a sense, he is going to be the one that's going to jar everybody from it. I'll end by the one of the final footnotes in Rabbi Hatton's Perek Yud Gimel, is that Shimshon's name comes from Shemesh. Why? What is that? So he says, perhaps you could suggest, I mean, obviously the gods at the time were the Shemesh, the sun. So is it a knack on it, right? He's godly, but he's not a god. That's one possibility. But he puts out there the thought that in light of Manoach being a name of Menucha, you need something that is an auspicious name to indicate the great times ahead. And therefore, Shimshon is his name. Shimshon will usher in a complicated era, or I guess he will deal with a complicated era. His birth ushers in salvation from this time, but it will be done in a way that is certainly incredibly complicated. But always, despite his complicated nature, it will be Nazir LaHashem to connect the people better with Hashem. Have a wonderful Shabbos.